There's actually quite a lot of evidence for the truth of the Bible. And you might not really think about it because we think, oh, we have a blind faith. And it kind of contradicts the word itself. Faith is supposed to be something that we don't completely know about, but it's supposed to be based on evidence that we have. And that's what we have with the Bible. And so today I'm going to just go through some different evidences, I guess you could call them, of why we can believe in the Bible. So, can anybody name some of the main groups of evidence that we have in the truth of the Bible? I know Paul, he definitely can. Yeah, just a few. Leanne? Oh, right.
The archaeologic findings that they found.
Yes, that is a big one. All right. Oh, wait. Hold on. I think I spelled that right. All right. Anybody else?
Historical.
Historical. And now when you say historical, are you talking like events?
Yeah, events corroborating historical documents that support that, you know, biblical things.
You raising your hand? Oh, okay. Frank?
Fulfilled prophecy.
Yes, that's a big one. Any more? Hi.
The character and reliability of the witnesses.
Oh. All right, so you might have to help me out on that one. I didn't study that one too much.
Just say witnesses.
Okie dokie. Oh, and before I get too far into this, I want to say I very well could have something wrong. I had a lot of this down on my laptop, and about an hour ago, I figured out something was going wrong with my charger, and my laptop died. It just wasn't charging, and so I had to kind of get back my stuff within the last hour. So I have it down. I just don't, like, think that I couldn't be wrong in any of this. John?
There's geological references. Cities, places.
Yeah, I think that's what we were talking about with archaeological. Is that different?
That's different. Because some religious documentation names cities that don't exist. So our Bible names cities that do exist.
I think all those are
Well, even if it isn't...
The mountains, the plains, the valleys. So, everything's real.
Oh, he's talking... Sorry. I get what you're saying, John.
Okie dokie.
He's talking about the fact that the Bible describes the land and that... and distances between cities and height of mountains and so forth, like going up or going down.
Oh, okay.
And,
so...
And the what the Bible says about those things, the land formations, mm-hmm. is actually true.
Yeah. And so...
I thought you were talking about something different.
Yeah, I did too. Sorry about that. Frank?
Internal consistency. The Bible was written over 2,000 years.
Yes.
But it tells one story all the way through.
I'm just going to write consistency, just because I'm not Donna. All right. And then, Vaughn.
The multitude of manuscripts that exist.
Okie dokie. I'm going to put that one with consistency.
Where's my head to? I got his attention.
Yeah. And so, I thought you said you weren't raising your hand.
I changed my mind again.
Okay.
Like, art, like you see paintings and everything, and it has, like, the Trinity and everything.
I think that would be historical, but
I was thinking it would fall under that, but I don't know.
All right, that's true. I definitely didn't go into that at all, but that is true. You could look into that, Bob.
The fact that about 2 billion people believe it.
That's very true. Bobby's not here, but he had a story that a bunch of his coworkers were talking, who is the most influential person in history? And at the end, he was the last one, and he said Jesus. And everybody changed their mind, because no matter whether you believe he's true or not, he definitely is the most influential in history.
Million people that believe in Allah too.
So yeah,
you got to be careful with it. It's not that it's not true, but you got to be careful with it.
No, definitely.
You know, so.
And then also, all right. I was going to say this is evidence that we can believe in the Bible, and then also there is evidence that we can believe in the Bible we have today, versus the fact that we've had the Bible for so long, and that's called canonicity. Is I guess I can explain it later on, but basically the canonicity, my bad,
has to do with canons.
Yep, the literal word canon, not with two N's, is referring to a straight stick. Is the literal definition, or in olden times. A measuring stick, as they called it. And so, I'm just going to go through these and... Oh, did you have something?
Well, I did, but sorry. It's okay. No, because you're probably going to run out of time anyway. I was just going to say what Caleb said about art and what Bob said about 2 billion people, if you really has a lot of relevance, even though what Dennis said is true, because what you see in history... You cannot go back to any time in history after Christ without seeing the immense influence of Christianity. And so you have to explain that somehow. You certainly can say that a lot of people today are turning to Islam, or a lot of people today are turning to whatever, secularism. But as far as immediately after Christ and for centuries after, in spite of all the persecutions, there was an immense amount of influence that that Christ had.
And so I'm going to just literally in the order that I've written these here, just going to go through some different things with these, and you guys feel free to pitch in. Oh, yes. One side.
Oh, hi. For me, answered prayer based on the Bible and my reading, because I've been reading most of my life, and so answered prayer would be a big one of building my faith.
All right, so I'm going to start with archaeological, and so a lot of people will throw this out there that the Bible has no archaeological evidence, and I didn't feel like writing down all the cities and all the references that we had. I had more than this written down, but I had to rewrite them, and I had to get my thoughts collected in the last hour. So I'm just going to name off a couple of them, but there are plenty of different cities and manuscripts that we have found that would point to archaeological evidence in the Bible. And so I'm just going to write down a couple of cities that we've found. We found Bethel and Capernaum, Dan, I can hear you, Jericho, okay, Caleb, Ephesus, and just, Gaza, Hazor, Jericho, oh, I already wrote Jericho. Joppa, Nineveh, and plenty of other places. Yes, that was what my brother was whispering. And so you talk about different places that they've discovered, and you can go through a lot of these cities' commerce, actually, with other cities around them, trade and such. And you can also talk about wars that they've been documenting for many, many years and other stuff like that, where there has been connection to these different cities. And if this wasn't accurate, then we shouldn't have found all these cities, because they're not all in one place. They're all over the place in the Eastern world. They have found plenty of cities and evidence to support, I guess, what the Bible says archaeologically, just without any other evidence, just archaeologically, is that it connects so well. No other document that is made like this should ever come even close to how accurate this is archaeologically, especially over the amount of time. Yes, Bob?
Probably heard of that cable show, Ancient Bible Secrets.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks ago, there was a show that apparently they've discovered pottery belonging to Goliath that actually had his name on it. So there it is, just another.
That's pretty cool. I didn't see that when I was researching. But different things like that. They've found a now the word slips my mind, but a tablet, basically, with writing on it. I forget what they used to call them, but with the city of David written on it, and writings about Jesus and other historical characters like Caesar. Obviously, Caesar is very well accepted in history, and we have discovered documents with him written in there, and the Bible mentions him, obviously. Yes, Caleb?
Pottery's art.
Yes, pottery's art. Okay.
That has a lot to do with what John was talking about, that there are very, very few cities mentioned in the Bible. Occasionally we'll find one. Or peoples in the Bible. Again, occasionally we'll find one that hasn't been documented in history and archaeology over and over again. I mean, in specific detail, like we know exactly where Capernaum used to be, and we can dig up the destruction of it. Jesus foretold the destruction of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what contrasts the Bible from, like, what John was talking about, the Book of Mormon, which lists all these cities and peoples that we've never uncovered one single shred of evidence for them.
Mm-hmm. And also, brought to my mind, with prophecy, I did not have time to recover a lot of what I had. And so, don't get me wrong, that is going to be very frugal in the evidence that I have there today, because the mishap with technology. So I am sorry about that. If you want to find more about that, I would suggest trying to talk to Vaughn. He's very good with prophecy. Or many other people, such as Paul and Jim. Yes, are you raising your hand?
So you probably studied about the Hittites, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know if you were going to mention that or not.
I wasn't planning on going into super depth with it, okay. But yes, the
in brief, as I recall, and you can correct me if your research differs. For many years, a few hundred years ago, that was a common criticism of the Bible, was that the Hittites were mentioned among the peoples who dwelled in Canaan, and we could find no evidence of such a people existing until the late 1800s, when, in fact, archaeologists did find that group of people did exist. And,
mm-hmm.
and You know, that's often cited as an example of somebody trying to claim that, hey, the Bible said these people don't exist, or these people do exist, we can't find them, and then they did.
Yeah. That was one big, I guess, claim to fame against the Bible was the Hittites. And so we also have historical, and I think that goes more into, I guess, the literal manuscripts that we have and the writings that...
The archaeological ones are more about physical evidence,
yeah.
Physical proofs, where it varies in historical because it's accounts of things that happen, events.
Mm-hmm.
And but the two of them do overlap. But the thing with the historical is that it's the history in the Bible is also duplicated through the histories of the people that they encountered.
Yes, and I was going to get into part of that. We have 10,000 different manuscripts, whether it's full manuscripts or fragments, but 10,000 of them. I'm guessing that's a rounded number. But that'd be kind of crazy that it was exactly 10,000. But can anybody guess? I'm pretty sure you know exactly the number, Paul, of how many variants there are in those 10,000 manuscripts. And for those of you who don't know exactly what a variant is, because I didn't when I first started this, a variant is something that within the manuscripts differs, whether the book of Luke is often cited as one with variants that... this verse in this manuscript is different than this one in plenty of different ways, and I'll go a little into why those are different. But can anybody guess how many variants in those 10,000 manuscripts there are? Caleb? That'd be a funny guess, but no. Anybody else? Yes? 20. All right. That'd be crazy. If you actually went into, like, the exact percentage of the Bible, you'd have to have so many numbers and, like, 0.99999. But no, it's quite a bit more than that. Any other guesses? Just throw them out there just for the fun of it. 150 is quite a bit more than that. All right, Cameron is by far the closest at 150,000. 200,000. 200,000 is how many variants there are. And that sounds like a crazy number. 200,000 differences in the manuscripts that we have. Now I'm going to go, and I was reading this book. It's called The Encyclopedia of Apologetics. And so, obviously, I feel safe in quoting this because I think it's better than what knowledge I have. So, there are eight of them, and I'm actually not going to say the last three because they have to do with... I mean, sorry, the last two because they have to do with the pronunciation of a word when they were writing them down. But the most common reason for variants are confusion of similar letters as they're copying it down, and so they'll write a wrong letter because of that. Homophony... where similar sounding words, for whatever reason, you're listening to somebody and you hear this word, but they actually said this word, and so they write it down like that. Haplography, the omission of a letter or a word, and that means that somebody pronounced it wrong. I mean, you go to Boston and... I mean, you think about if you went to Boston and were trying to write something down, and then you went to, I don't know, say the complete opposite on the West Coast, and you tried to write something down. Obviously, it sounds a little different. So if you're copying down a whole book as big as the Bible, you're going to have something wrong. Didography, a letter or word being written twice. So a common one was the word to, T-O, and that was written twice a couple of times. I mean, these people had to have lost some focus somewhere. I mean, this would be insane. Metathesis, a reversal in order of two letters or words. So you flip the letters or you flip the words. And there you go. Jesus Christ or Christ Jesus. And then incorrect word divisions. And I thought this one was interesting, is that many early manuscripts didn't have spaces. It was just like all one big chunk. And so they had to divide the words. And so if you divided it kind of wrong, then it could be a mishap there. But you think the number seems to be getting a little smaller now, 200,000. And you're talking about how much time has been passed that we've been copying this down and copying this down and copying this down. How many people have been doing it? There's plenty of different people that have been doing it. And there's also, that was unintentional. There's also intentional where people either took their own opinion or they took historical evidence that they thought was different in the Bible and they changed it a little bit and different stuff like that where people had good intentions on changing it and so they intentionally changed it. And I wasn't really going to go into that because these are the biggest ones that people are going to talk about. And I think the biggest way to avoid that is just being careful what translation you're reading from, because opinion or bias can be a huge factor in choosing your version of Bible. And so I wanted to say the Dead Sea Scrolls, obviously the most commonly spoken of scrolls of the Bible, were discovered in, or sorry, not discovered in, but they were documented to have been from as early as 250 BC. It's quite a while ago, but some of the earliest books of the Bible written by Moses were written in 1500 BC. So there's a 1,000 years difference there where we don't have any of these documents. And yet, what we have written here these thousands of years ago, and then what we have now, and people have done plenty of different conversions and math to do this, but for most experts talking about the percentage of correctivity, or whatever the word is, of the Bible today that we have, the lowest is around 95% correct. That is the very lowest. The closest, obviously, is 99.9% correct. And then there was another one that was 99.75. And these are people who extensively research this and take time and time to put effort into finding the exact percentage of what we have. But 95% correct, over a 1,000-year gap that we don't have any of the manuscripts. That's incredible. Not to mention the fact that you talk about the people who are writing these books were thousands of years apart, maybe not thousands, but at least from like the latest to the earliest, at least another 1,000 years, and how many of them didn't even have contact with each other. I mean, obviously the apostles did, but I don't think the apostles had contact with Moses. And yet all their stuff aligns perfectly. I think it's insane that that actually matches up. And then you go into the archaeological, where these people had no means of actually, I guess, making up cities and having them align with other people who are making up these cities. Because if it's wrong, then obviously they made it up. But they didn't make it up because we found all of these or we've seen written documents about them. And so how could you make up something over 2,000 years and have somebody else come to the same conclusion? The same name, the same statistics about the city, and have it not be real? I don't understand that. They didn't have any contact with each other. It's not possible. And yet they align perfectly. And so that's historical. Oh, I actually didn't write any of that down. So hopefully you guys were listening. But fulfilled prophecy. This was the one I was saying wasn't going to be too filled, even though all these prophecies were fulfilled. But you talk about the old prophets in the Old Testament, and then you align them with the writings of the apostles or of later stuff in the New Testament, and they not only align within the Bible, but you also have historical evidence backing them up other than the Bible, about other people writing about these different prophecies. And so, why would somebody outside of the Bible, because, I mean, you take different religions now, and obviously they're made up. Like, I don't think anybody's going to say Greek mythology is real. It doesn't have enough evidence, or any, really. But you take people who are outside of this religion, and yet they're still writing about the facts in it. Why would they do that if it's all made up? If they didn't believe in it, and they still write about it, I wouldn't get that. These people are putting their lives on the line for this because it was hypocrisy. You don't put your life on the line for something you don't believe or something that didn't happen. Yeah.
I was just going to say that the pagan or the Gentile writers that, even Jewish, that wrote about Christ, they didn't necessarily risk their life, but
yeah,
they certainly, they wrote a lot of the details. Pliny, Tacitus, Josephus is probably the main one. He was a Jew. He had no reason to believe in Jesus, and yet he recorded many really true things about Jesus and his followers. And so he had no motive to do that, other than the fact that it was true.
Yeah, so, again, just if you have no motive to do something and no way to, I mean, let me give you an example real quick. So, I write a story, this random book, doesn't have to be about the Bible, just a story. So, Johnny goes out one day and he's walking with his friend and they pick some berries and they come home. So you have characters with names, you have the events they did, and say I named the place, it's in Northborough. And now that's how specific this stuff in the Bible is, that they have the names of the characters, names of the place, and names of, but what happened, or what was going to happen, per se, for prophecies. And then thousands of years later, you have another person who comes in and, oh, wait, this just happened. Somebody wrote about this like 1,500 years ago. Huh, crazy, right? John?
So, one of the important things is the dating of this historical manuscripts. And they recently found that the Gospel of Mark was used as a mask material in a mummified body, and that was less than 100 AD, which is important because in Mark, Jesus predicts the destruction of the temple.
And
so,
after.
Right, and so if this was predicted before 70 AD, then Jesus predicted something that no one could have known about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the dating of the books is a witness to the prophecy of the Bible.
I was just talking about how indicative the food could be as evidence of the historicity of the Bible.
Caleb and then Bill.
I just thought of this now. I don't believe it or anything, but maybe somebody wrote a story, and it was the Bible, and then people misinterpreted it and thought that it was all true, and then it just became a religion. I don't know, I just thought of that.
That's true, Caleb. That actually happened. And the man who discovered the story was named Sidney Rigdon. He was a Church of Christ preacher who apostated and became friends with a man named Joseph Smith. And the best knowledge we have, Sidney Rigdon stole a novel from a print shop and gave it to Joseph Smith, and it became the Book of Mormon.
Okay. So, again, I'm sorry about not having too much with the prophecy. I lost that. So, definitely look into it, though, because it does have a lot of fact about it. Oh, sorry, Bill. Yes.
Well, that's all right. I was going to say, you hear a lot about the 300-something prophecies about Jesus, but I've read there are actually like 700-plus prophecies, the rest, you know, having to do with other things. So that's a lot of prophecy fulfilled.
Yeah, and I loved this analogy, was that I think it was something like 3 of the prophecies that Jesus fulfilled, and we have evidence for of them to have actually been fulfilled, but just the chance that somebody would say this and then later on it would actually happen is that would be the same chance as somebody filling the United States with quarters 3 feet high and putting a dot on one of them and having somebody pick it up on their first try. Just the, not the fact that they're impossible because they're miracles, but literally the fact that somebody would say this and then later on one person would fulfill all of these things, as specific as they are. And as Bill was saying, 300 prophecies, not 3, were fulfilled by Jesus. And I'm not completely sure as to how much evidence we have for every single one of these prophecies, but I know we have a lot of evidence for quite a few of them, and even to have evidence for as many as we have is too much to repute by any means. And so let's move on to our next point. And I'm sorry, this is probably not the most clear class you've ever heard. I'm trying to give information as best I can. And so we have, I already talked a little bit about the consistency of the manuscripts and about over the amount of time. Canonicity. All right, really quickly. So canonicity is, there are a lot more books than the 66 that we have in the Bible. A lot more. But canonicity is, over time, the most profound of the Christian scholars in the world would basically get together and do research on these different books, and whether it's literature discrepancies or historical or anything like that, is they would get together and they would pick which ones were the most relevant, but also the most accurate. And they would do this over the generations and generations, and each generation they'd go back and they'd try and fix it as best they can until, and I don't actually know how recently it was until they actually concluded these 66 books. All right, so 367 AD was how. All right, all the books of the New Testament. The Old Testament was done a little before this, but 367 AD was when they finally confirmed the 66 books that they have. But with that, you have One, the amount of people that were doing this. This is over generations, and the most profound scholars of the time were doing this generation after generation, doing research on this. Two is that you have scribal practices of that time, and just not even about the Bible, but just of scribes in general of the time, how strict they were down to the very word on their translations and copying was the most accurate copying in history ever documented at this time that they were copying this. And so you have the most accurate copying plus generations of scholars picking through just to make sure that it's as accurate as can be and as factual, I guess, as it can be. And you end up with these 66 books. And so that was the evidence for the Bible we have today versus the Bible that they had long ago. And obviously there's quite a bit more than that, but I had to sum it up really quickly. So I'm sorry, guys, but we have to wrap it up. So I guess what I would give to you is you might not have the most solid, per se, alibi for the Bible from this class. There's a lot of information about it. There really is. But I guess what I would say is if you come across somebody who is wary about trusting the Bible, or if you yourself are like worrying about whether it's actually accurate or not, I would say go and actually do research on it. And even if you have to tell this person that I have to do research on this, but I know people who have done immense amounts of research to prove this, and there has been years worth of it to prove that this is very true. And so I would just tell them that and actually do research on your own to get a grasp of, I guess, the accuracy of what you're reading.